you're doing.
I'm Raymond, I'm an addict. It's always a pleasure to be in a Narcotics Anonymous meeting. I praise God. I want to extend a warm welcome to everybody. Anybody here new to the program and fellowship in Narcotics Anonymous, I want to tell you that you have a home here, and just for the day, we never have to use again. And I mean that in all sincerity. You know what I mean? We never have to use again. And, you know, I was pretty enthused about the call, and I'm always willing to, like, serve Narcotics Anonymous, you know. And one of the things that I got in touch with when I got the call and I was told about the topic is that it was real cool because, you know, a lot of people that I've come, like, I've been here 13 years, you know what I'm saying? And it's real important for me to continue to get information about what I'm dealing with on a daily basis, this disease called addiction. You know, and when I think about the literature, like, I'm a dude, like, I'm in the books. You know, and a lot of times people have their own experience and their own thoughts about how they feel about the books. Sometimes, you know, and being in Philly, like, sometimes addicts, and it may be the same here, but in Philly, like, people can be a little critical. You know, when you break out the literature, you know, there you go with the books, and you know, he's basic text quoter, and like, dig this, right? All that stuff, I've come to a point in my recovery, right, that stuff is really not important to me. What's important is that I don't use drugs again. And I use any means necessary to not crawl on any more floors, peep out of no more windows, use no more sign language, or feel the pain of active addiction ever again. When I first read Who's an Addict, y'all was talking about me. I had never read that kind of information before. So I knew that I was in the right place. You know, and I'm not one to tell anybody, like, the basics is like, we never get away from the basics. Yeah, I got bad eyesight, so when I got my books, I got the big print. I need to see. You dig what I'm saying? I need to see, like, what's going on and what y'all telling me here, right? Because all my devices had not worked for me. You know, so when I got my text and I got my, it works how and why, and then when the step working guide came out, right, because the it works how and why was like an extension of the basic text, right? And then the step working guide was like an extension of it works how and why. It started to really get me in touch with the deeper aspects of my addiction. You dig what I'm saying? So I needed to understand, like, y'all told me in the first step about powerlessness and unmanageability and all that stuff, but I didn't realize that there was so much more to know and learn. Now, I want to mention this real quick, right, about the working guide, right? And, you know, thank God for open-mindedness, one of our critical and we say indispensable principles around here, right? Because, you know, I used to think that newcomers shouldn't touch this. This was my idea about this step working guide, right? Because I know I had years clean when I first seen the book and some of the questions that it was asking, and I was like, shit, this is deep. I mean, you know, because I had never ventured in some of these areas. I mean, I did some step work at the point, but I never really had, like, really gotten down deep to really find out the exact natures of some stuff. You know, so for all the information that was offering me, right, and I want to read this real quick, right? It says that, these guides are meant to be used by NA members at any stage of recovery, whether it's our first time through the steps or we've been living the steps as our guiding force for many years. This book is intentionally written to be relevant to newcomers and help more experienced members develop a deeper understanding of the 12 steps. As NA grows in numbers, in diversity, and in strength and longevity of clean time, we need literature that will continue to serve the needs of the fellowship. Literature that grows along with the fellowship. See, I understand that as I stay active in my recovery process, I'm going to grow. I'm going to mature. Y'all told me something early on. Change was going to take place whether I wanted it to or not. So why not participate? Why not become involved with change? The most frightening thing is that y'all told me if I wanted some insurance, I needed to take these steps. Recovery as experienced through the 12 steps is our goal. The bottom line is I didn't want to use no more. And I didn't fully understand what I was getting into. Dig what it say. The working title for this project was many years the Step Writing Guides. However, we recognize that the word writing imposed a limitation on members who may be unable to write or may choose not to use writing as the means for working the 12 steps. So it became the Step Working Guide. Now, the first step in the basic text, it tells us, right, the steps do not work by magic. We learn to live them. So as I experience information through the step working guide, right, I get the full experience and benefit of spiritual development, spiritual maturation, and all these things that we talk about that come with the blessings of being in recovery. I accept addiction as a part of my life. I accept my shortcomings, and I don't always feel good about these things. But the first part, and it tells us, and we do recover. Recovery begins with surrender. I give up. I had to understand that surrender meant more than just not using drugs. I had to understand that surrender and recovery meant more than not using drugs. And I had to get into other aspects of what we talk about in this disease. And dig what it say about the disease of addiction. It tells us what makes us addicts is the disease of addiction. Not the drugs, not our behavior, but our disease. There's something within us that makes us unable to control our use of drugs. And this same something also makes us prone to obsession and compulsion in other areas of our lives. How can we tell when our disease is active? When we become trapped in obsessive, compulsive, self-centered routines, endless loops that lead nowhere but to physical, mental, spiritual, and emotional decay. Then it goes on to ask us some questions. What is it like when I'm obsessed with something? Or does my thinking follow a pattern and ask me to describe these things? Now, when I put drugs down, I picked up everything I could. I don't know what your story is, but I ain't had this relationship with God that was so super ultra dynamic that we had it going on. I was still fixed on things outside of me. Money, sex, women, clothes, shopping. Those were the things that I picked up. And I would obsess with things like I had to have, like my pair of Jordans came out. I had to have every color. Little stuff like that. 6 blue shirts in the closet. I don't even like them. You know what I'm saying? Just obsession. I had to start seeing how these things started to affect my life, because there's another thing about the peace in the first step in the working guide that talks about denial. And denial being that part of the disease that tells us we don't have a disease. It tells me 13 years later there's nothing wrong with you. You've gotten better. And then the question becomes, am I getting better or am I just getting by? So I need to start identifying how the disease, even after some clean time, continues to knock on this addict's door. And it's not necessarily with the drugs, because dig this, I know as I grow spiritually, as God continues to guide me, disease is growing too. He's growing too. And he knows my weak links. He knows what affects me. He knows the things I become obsessed and compulsed with. He knows how to attack me with self-centeredness. He knows these things. So I need to continue to use the information that I'm being given, smashing all reservations. We talk about powerlessness. Stick this, right? We talk about powerlessness as the driving force. When the driving force in our life is beyond our control. Our addiction certainly qualifies as such as uncontrollable driving force. We cannot moderate or control our using or other compulsive behaviors, even when they're causing us to lose the things that matter most to us. In my experience with grabbing things outside of me, I always lose me. Spiritual deprivation. I rob myself. This is why I continue to understand the importance of coming to believe in a power greater to restore me to sanity. I remember the initial experience of saying, okay, it may be all right to say, all right, I'm crazy. Because when I look at some of the things I've done, using and clean, I got to be plumb out of my damn mind. So there's this need for faith and sanity. And in the working guide, the first thing it helps us to identify is the hope piece. After smashing all the reservations, all the illusions, submitting to powerlessness and unmanageability in the first step, now the second step tells us we open the door to recovery. Because it ain't really hit the fan yet. So when I understand that there's this attitude and this idea that I need to have about a power greater, right? And my man was talking about it in an earlier meeting. Would it be insane to walk up to somebody and ask, can I please have a fatal heart attack? Yeah, that's crazy. And identify the most obvious insanity of my addiction, knowing what happens to me when I use drugs and I use anyway. Knowing what happens to me when I use people and I use anyway. Knowing what happens to me when I act out on particular behaviors and I act out anyway. Doing the same things and expecting different results. Covers it all, right? It tells us there's a process to restoration. When that door is open to restoration, right, then it's a little easier for me to make a decision to turn my will and my life over to the care of God in the third step. Now, dig what it say about making a decision. Flow with me, y'all. By working the third step, we are allowing someone or something to care for us, not control us or conduct our lives for us. Instead, we are making a simple decision to change direction, to stop rebelling at the natural and logical flow of events in our lives, to stop worrying ourselves out trying to make everything happen as if we were in charge of the world. Get your ass out of your way. Basically, is what I get from that. Get out of your own way, man. You dig what I'm saying? And just come to terms with there's a power that's willing to care for you, that's willing to hold you and take care of you if you let it. Because in the text, it tells us sometimes we get in God's way too much. And he lets us. Go ahead. I'll be right here when you get done. When you get done doing your thing and killing yourself, I'll be right here. So through my experiences and the pain as it becomes as a result of self-will, it's a little easier for me today to say God is yours. Because I see what I'm about to walk into. I see what's coming. Self-will. What exactly is self-will? Sometimes it's total withdrawal and isolation. We end up living a very lonely and self-absorbed existence. Sometimes self-will causes us to act to the exclusion of any consideration other than what we want. When I get fixed in an idea, I'm out of here. I'm out of here. And I see it no way than the way I want to see it. But through the experiences that I'll continue to have in the process with turning it over, just saying, God, here, look, he said, we made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God. My will be my thinking, my life be my actions. Here, man, take it. Take it, because I'm about to kill myself. And the surrender that comes with that, right, provides a smoother road and a smoother transition to do the right thing. So by the time I would go into my experiences with doing four steps, right, and each time that I experienced the transition, it became a little easier because I got more in touch with what God is capable of doing. So we say we take an inventory. It say we made a searching and fearless moral inventory. Right? And it did what it say, right? First, right? It tell us in the working God, right? Flow with me. Why work a fourth step? After all, we've been able to stay clean so far, but some of us are still haunted by driving obsession to use drugs. Others find that the feelings of discomfort are more subtle, a nagging feeling that something isn't quite right, a sense of impending doom, or feelings of fear and anger that have no apparent reason. Still, others may think we're doing just fine without a fourth step. However, our experience as a fellowship has shown that sooner or later, members who don't work this crucial step relapse. Page 26. It works from how and why. Right? Then what it says in the step. We should ask ourselves what we want out of recovery. Most of us answer this question by saying that we just want to be comfortable or happy or serene. We just want to like ourselves. But how can we like ourselves when we don't even know who we are? The fourth step is a method for learning about ourselves, and it is as much about finding our character assets as it is about identifying the exact nature of our wrongs. The inventory process is an avenue to freedom. Many of us have discovered as we work the fourth step that our problems didn't begin the first time we took drugs, but long before, when the seeds of our addiction were actually planted. With some stuff happening before I even used. You dig what I'm saying? So I had to start identifying some things. Now the courage I got from building the foundation in the first three let me know, excuse me, hon, that God had me. So I wasn't really overwhelmed with fear in my initial fourth step experience. But dig this, later on, right? The fear to do it had become a little more overbearing than my initial experience. Because dig this, it tells us in the fourth step that sometimes our clean time works against us when it comes time to do a fourth step. Because we figure we've been around here for a minute, right? And I've acted out on so many things. Do I really want to know what's happening? I don't know if I really want that information.
Dig it. There are times when our clean time can actually work against us when we fail to acknowledge our fear of taking an inventory. But dig what it say though. But we need to give ourselves permission to be afraid. It's okay. I could be scared all I want. But I go back to the commitment that I made in the third step and get and do the work. Do the work. So when I start taking a look at these things, how resentments have affected my life, how guilt and shame have affected my life, how anger, how fear have affected my life, all these different things, abuse issues, my sexual tendencies, all these different things, like I ain't want to look at none of this stuff. You know, because for a minute I was still like hung with the idea that like, you know, remember when you first got clean, you just be like, yay. Just be like all over the place, you know, I'm clean, what? You know what I'm saying? Then the work come. Then the work come. Then you got to start taking a look at stuff. So start telling me about little things about my, and I told you I picked a lot of things up. I had to look at my resentments with my father. I tell you about resentments, right? We have resentments when we re-feel old feelings. When we are unable to let go. When we cannot forgive and forget something that has upset us. I carried them for a long time. I had to identify who I have resentments with and why. And become willing to do the work to make the changes. So I had to start taking a look. Check it out. Sex. Right? This is a very uncomfortable area for most of us. Right? And we may be tempted to stop and say, nope, this is far enough. Right? Now to ask some questions. Have I confused sex with love? Now, let me go to work sound wine for a minute. We may have sex. Hold on. Matter of fact, we will probably find identical conflicts and behaviors in our romantic relationships. We'll see the same difficulties with trust, refusal to be vulnerable, and perhaps a lifelong pattern of inability to make commitments. As we write, we'll most likely see fear of intimacy in each relationship or discover that we've never understood the difference between intimacy and sex. We may have settled for sex when we really wanted love. We may have used sex to get something we wanted or believed that by having sex, we could extract a commitment from an unwilling partner. We ask ourselves if our sexual behavior has been based in selfishness or in love, or we may have used sex to fill the spiritual void we left inside. And see, I had to identify through writing, I got experience with all that. You dig what I'm saying? And I'm talking about waking up like, and you know, you ever engage in a certain thing, and then when you finish, it's like, God, ew, what are you doing? And I'm talking about coming from that place where it was comfortable at one time. I mean, I would engage and be like, shit, I handle my business. Ego tripping. But when this program and God starts to cleanse you spiritually, the behaviors don't work anymore. You learn to become a little more reliant on what He wants done. So in the fifth step, I had to start paying a little more attention to why I behave like this. You're selfish, man. The bottom line is that you're selfish. You want what you want when you want it, and you don't consider other people's feelings when you're out to get it. And that ain't fair. And then when the shoe got on the other foot and I started experiencing some of these things, I couldn't handle it. I couldn't handle it. I got the name calling. He ain't shit. Fuck that bitch. You know what I'm saying? You know, and I really had to start paying attention to how my man earlier was talking about hating himself and not feeling good about himself. You know, and I've had self-esteem issues all of my life, and I too come from a good family. I've done good things in my life. But sometimes disease got a way of telling you you ain't shit. And having you believe that. So five say, tell the truth, cut and dry, man. For the first time, come off the damn corner. Stop talking on the surface. Right? And come clean about who you are. So it started asking me about a confidant. It started asking me about identifying that person that I really trust with who I am. And once I was able to start on that journey, man, everything that I continue to write in 4 and talk about in 5, I see in 6. And the first thing 6 say is, why ask for something before you're ready for it? If you ain't ready to make some changes, don't be asking God for the removal. This will be asking for trouble. You dig what I'm saying? But I'm talking about, again, growth versus deprivation.
And I'm talking about being clean for years, miserable. Because I won't let go of defects. Because I keep on wanting to practice something that I think is satisfying this inner knowing that I'm feeling. Hey, fam. It don't work no more. So say we grow into mature consciousness in the sixth step and really asking myself, am I ready to make the changes? Am I mature enough? Right? Do I want to come out of that five-year-old syndrome? That every time, like, if I can't play, give me my damn ball. So, we talk about coupling that up with seven, right? And it took years for some of this stuff because one of the things in seven step, we talk about humility versus humiliation, right? And one of the things that attracted me, because when I came in off the corner. In spite of my education, in spite of my background, in spite of my family, like, I still had a thing for the corner, sis. You feel me? I had to still had to be, like, on the corner. Dig what it say. Many of us came to N.A. with a certain street mentality. The only way we knew to get what we wanted was by approaching it indirectly and manipulating people. We didn't realize that we could be just forthright and have the same chance, if not better, of fulfilling our needs. We spend years learning to blank our facial expressions, hide our compassion, and harden ourselves. By the time we arrived at NA, we were very good at it, so good, in fact, that novice addicts were probably looking to our example the same way we looked to older addicts when we first started. We learned to suppress all humanity and became, in many cases, completely inhuman. So I understand through the process of humility and humiliation, humility just being that part of me that's honest with me about me. It ain't about you. And I spare myself the humiliation by being honest with me and not acting out on things I know about myself that cause me and others harm. They say, what they say, if you are not humble, you are humiliated. Because as a result of not being humble, right, I harm people. Which takes us to the list. Now, early in my recovery, when I first did the eighth step, I was so, dig this, I was so joyful about recovery. When I did, I had all these people, all this stuff. I ran to my sponsors, trying to do this. I'm getting it in. You understand? I'm recovering. He said, no, you're crazy. Because all the stuff that was on the list, man, he said, that is nothing for you to be proud about. He said, you hurt a lot of people, man. And now we're in the process of cleaning up shop. My experience was not simple when it came to my initial eighth step. And even after that, it hasn't been simple because it's a hell of a thing just to get out of that place of what you did to me. That self-centeredness still runs rampant sometimes. Like if she wouldn't have did this or he wouldn't have done that, then I wouldn't have did what I did. But I had to understand, and the book broke it down. The eighth step is broken down in two parts. We make the list, then we become willing. But I had to put certain things on the list. Check it out. An additional struggle many of us face when we identify types of harm arises from an automatic tendency to focus only on the time before we stop using. It's a little easier for us to be rigorously honest about the harm we cause in our act of addiction. We were using drugs. We were different people. However, we all cause harm during our recovery. Whether we intended to or not does not matter. In fact, we probably cause harm to people with whom we share our recovery, other NA members. Right? We may have gossiped about them, withdrawn from them, responded with insensitivity to their pain, interfered in the sponsorship relationship, tried to control the sponsor's behavior, behaved like an ingrate with a sponsor, stolen seven tradition money, manipulated people by using our clean time as a source of credibility in a service argument, or sexually exploited a newcomer, to name a few relatively common examples. I got experience with all that. You dig what I'm saying? And what the step worker God has continued to help me to do is be honest with myself about my experience and not be afraid of y'all. And what are y'all going to think about me and my experiences? I can't afford to, because what it did was it opened the door to engage in the process and the freedom that comes with making amends. And what I had to understand about the amends process through this working guide was that in some instances, man, just not doing or changing a behavior was not enough. I had to go to some people and clean up shop. And I had to ask God for the courage to do it. And a lot of us, we have our own experiences. But I didn't feel comfortable sometimes until I went to somebody and said, listen, I need to amend something. But I needed the guidance of my sponsor through the literature because there were instances where I was ready to cause harm to myself, calling myself recovering, calling myself wanting to fix something when it wasn't appropriate. Because the other thing it tells us in the middle of this book, there's one inappropriate way to use this book alone. Do not go in here by yourself. So when I can start paying attention to these areas of my life and I can start cleaning up shop in the inventory, and it tells us once I form that habit of looking at myself, right, I have less experience with the second part of the 10th step, having to correct the wrongs. Just take a look at yourself, man. Stay engaged in that habit of looking at you, but not become obsessive with it and not kick yourself for your mistakes. Because when I can do that, right, I can get a clearer reception to what God is saying to me. And he's telling me, grow up and calm down. Because I got you. Just keep trying to do what I tell you to do. Right? I got a couple minutes and I'm going to finish, man. He's telling me, you already have access to me, man. You already got the plug. Use it. Use it. Call me. I know you better than you. Call me. So when we talk about prayer and meditation, that whole experience, right, and it talks about discipline, and it talks about just sitting still long enough to get an answer. Be still, man. I had to practice that. I had to learn how to turn things off in the house and just be quiet. And that's hard when you come from a dramatic place. That's hard. And I had to start asking for the guidance in other areas. I'm 8 months moved from a romantic relationship. This is a new area. I ain't never been here. Right? And it hasn't been easy. Right? And I want to share this in 1 Peter 12 and I'm done. Listen. It tells us in the third step, right, we explore the fine line that divides humble and honest pursuit of our goals from subtle manipulation and forced results. Now, with the experience we have gained in the intervening steps, we are much better equipped to spot that line and stay on the right side of it. As we go after the things we want, we need to continuously gauge our distance from that line. For instance, we may decide we want to be in a romantic relationship. There's nothing wrong with that, provided we are spiritually motivated and keep track of the line between God's will and self-will. If we lie to make ourselves seem more attractive, right, or become chameleons, we're acting on self-will. If we honestly express who we are, we're more likely to be pursuing God's will. If we're trying to change our potential partner in a relationship into something he or she is not, we're acting on self-will. If, on the other hand, we've already determined what we want in a partner, and the person we're seeing seems to be matching that vision without our intervention, we're probably living in God's will. That's how we tell whether a relationship is God's will for us or not. I have no experience with that. Most of my experience in relationships have been a result of my choices. She's cute and she got thick hips and a pretty smile. Let's have it. I get messages early on that say this is not going to work, but you know what? We're going to make it happen because we're in recovery. For the first time, I'm allowing myself, as you ladies say, exhale. I'm giving myself a chance to breathe for the first time and allow God to do his work. Because I know I'm not a bad dude. You understand? And I need to take my time and allow some things to happen as opposed to what we say, subtle manipulation and forced results. And when I continue to practice this program through a 12 step, right, the more I'm gaining, the more I'm able to give. They say our spirits become awakened in the 12 step, right? And we try to carry this message to other addicts that no matter what, I'm not going to get high. I'm not using. Now, I don't know if that sounds arrogant or whatever, right? There's a surrender in me, this addict, Raymond. I ain't getting high no more. It's over. And I understand that as long as I engage and accept the awakening of my spirit, which is to be alive, and let God do his job, I'm going to be just fine. I'm going to be just fine. I get a pleasure out of helping people, man. Because in turn, I help myself. So I encourage anybody, right? Flow with the books, man. Like in Philly, like I've grown to a place like I don't even care. You say what you want. Say what you want. Because one thing I identify about that, right? When people fuss about the literature, and what I understand is that there may be some things going, maybe they can't read. I had to start opening my mind to things like that. Maybe they can, or maybe they're just not willing to do the work. That's okay. That's your choice. I choose to do the work. I do. Because this is what's helping me. This kid got to grow up, man. I'll be 40 this year. You dig what I'm saying? The games is over. They over. You know what I'm saying? So if you knew, or anybody that's here, if you haven't had the experience, right, you know, it's just a suggestion. Like, it's all that. I'm telling you. You're going to start touching stuff, man, right? And the serenity that's going to come as a result of doing the work, bro, I can't even explain in words. Thanks.
Thank you, Raymond. Now I'd like to introduce our second speaker. I'd like to introduce Pauline S. from Central Maryland.
Hey! Was that something? Oh my God. Spiritually refreshed and glad to be alive. Where'd the tape guy go? All right, can you hear me okay? It's an interesting experience to have these two large eyeballs just sort of stuck in your face, especially because my arms are so short to reach the podium where the book is. And I want to thank Raymond for lending me his book as well. The It Works How and Why Original Green and Gold was published in 1993, and for those of you who weren't present for the writing of it, it's... There was a guy in my home group a couple weeks ago, and what he shared was he really gets irritated when he reads an article or some sort of reference to a topic that he knows is inaccurate. You know, he was just saying, you know, you peruse you're looking at a magazine and someone's trying to explain something to you, but they're not really that proficient at the subject matter. And he says, make no mistake, you won't have that in here. You really will not find. We're experts at addiction and we're experts at recovery. There is no one like us to write our literature, only us. And even though it took me, I got set, what is it? 7,958 days clean, which translates to, thank you. I got clean in 1982, so 21 years and a few months.
Damn.
I know, and I probably look way too young for that. And you know, and I say that's kind of funny because I still stand in the mirror and think, oh my God, I need some surgery, you know, some cosmetic work. Vanity, you know, drive you crazy. Let me get rid of this gum. I'll end up swallowing it. Anyway. In the mid-80s, and I heard John talk about this morning at another meeting, as I'm privileged to be second-string pioneer at the growth of Narcotics Anonymous. And in the mid-80s, we grew like mad. It was tremendous. And the basic text was published in 1982, but we didn't get it till 83. And like it was like the new drug. You know, everybody just went for it because we really needed our own literature. And in my experience, you know, when I was 6 months clean and I was embarking on step four at my sponsor's direction, actually she tricked me, and that's cool, whatever works. You know, I had to use literature that was approved by a different fellowship. And thank goodness it still worked. You know, it got me through, but it was not perfect. It was ample, but it wasn't perfect. And he got me through. And then several years later, actually like 2 years later, I wrote another inventory that was unapproved literature. Someone handed me, and my sponsor at the time, you know, she's like, yeah, okay, you can use that. That's fine. So very deep, involved questions. did them all, went, you know, shared it with her. That was a second four step. And in the early 80s, if you didn't have a sponsor, Narcotics Anonymous, which, you know, was few and far between, if you didn't, then you, like me, was not encouraged to write the first couple of steps, only the fourth step. So I never wrote a first step and never wrote a second step and didn't write a third step. I just went through the process with my sponsor. And I did write a fourth step, and it was very abbreviated and scratched the surface. And then a couple years later, came back and wrote another fourth step. And then I've written another fourth step. And I can speak a lot about the fourth step because, you know, what I heard from Raymond and what my story is about, you know, peeling layers off of that onion and trying to get to the core of my self-centeredness. You know, what is my expression, and why do I still act out? You know, why are these things still? You know, why haven't I arrived at perfection? You know, what holds me back? A couple things, not many, but a couple. You know. So anyway, look, when I was in early recovery and before we had this tremendous literature, I was in a relationship. This is when I discovered the other meanings of addiction. And I really mean this from the bottom of my heart. Before we wrote our own books, no one could really address the disease of addiction the way that we could in our fellowship. And I just didn't quite grasp it. You know, and then there's still that saying that, you know, it takes 5 years to get out of the woods. You know, you still have like a certain fog and you'll step out of it after you get like 5 or so years. And I've witnessed that, and it's my own experience. So, but anyway, I was in this relationship and I was addicted to this man. You know, couldn't stand him on a daily basis.
Right.
Still hanging in there to yell at him. Give him a hard time. What is that? That is so awful. But that was my, and that was how my sponsor got me to understand, again, the nature of addiction. He's a drug, Pauline. Something about him changes the way you feel. Like, eureka! Why couldn't I see that? Well, you know, it's a process. You don't just, bing, first step, I got it all down, man. It's not quite like that. So we were trying to have this relationship, and I think he was probably suffering the same way I was. Like, he was addicted to me, and we weren't compatible at all. And we were trying to just do some stuff to make it work. And so we decided to do fourth and fifth step together. So you know, and we used a list of character defects. And we each wrote a couple paragraphs and then came back and shared. And, well, you know, it didn't work. Yeah, right, you know. I didn't even have to say that. It didn't work. You know, because quite frankly, you know, he's not going to give me the feedback my sponsor might. Like, oh, Pauline, that is such bullshit. You know, or any of that stuff. And I, you know, but anyway, it made us closer for about 5 hours and then, you know, we broke up, so. Awful, awful. Of course, I'm condensing the story, but anyway, in the mid-80s, I had the privilege of working on the It Works How and Why. And what we used to do back then, when there were literature, World Lit Committee and Regional Lit Committees, is they would travel. You know, like every quarter, a workshop would go to a, you know, a large enough region that would host it, and the local members there would show up and contribute. And so, you know, somewhere in step six is maybe a sentence or a paragraph that I got to actually help edit. And, you know, that book is just, it's just so, I don't know. There's just no word. I can't figure out a word. So it's perfect. That's the word that keeps coming to my mind. It is such a description of our experience, strength and hope. And I think it's cliche that we use that phrase a lot, but in that case, it really fits. So anyway, Here we are. We finally got that book published in 1993. It's wildly popular, and it speaks to all of us, no matter what our experience is. And then obviously there's this need to put the pen to paper with this book. So although Raymond has really tremendous experience with the STEP Working Guide, I have more of a clinical descriptive approach at this time. When this book was finally published, and I actually copied the approval version that was in the conference agenda report several times, for distribution amongst my babies and for me to get intimate with. But when it came, when it finally got released into print, I was, I had started this book in step 8. So I had, again, gotten out of another relationship. I think I'm a little broken in that area. Nah, I'm just practicing. I'm just practicing. That's right. I got to be optimistic. What happened was I was having some revelations about my behavior, and I have to say, my experience is much like you're talking about for in your present is when I have fallen in love with someone and tried to make a go at a relationship, not necessarily in that order. Sometimes we try to make a go at the relationship and fall in love. Sometimes we're just enmeshed from the very beginning, and you can pretty much guarantee that's an unhealthy union. But, I've been through the whole gamut. And anyway, I had separated from my husband. And I had no intentions of reconciling with him. Although he is a tremendous man, I was very frustrated, and I took the stubborn route, which was I'm not doing any more work. I've been trying to get his attention for a year, and he ain't hearing me, so up the road with him. And that's a really unfortunate posture to take. Especially in marriage. It's always worth a try, and I regret that. I give that to you as a hindsight. I took a stubborn position, and I regret that. He's a tremendous man. I don't think I'd still be married to him, quite frankly, but I just have a different opinion of my behavior than I did then when I was in it and I was angry. You know. So what does that have to do with this guide? I'll get to. I was newly out of my marriage, and some fella approached me for dating, and I dated him a little bit, and I couldn't get deep with him. Couldn't. I wasn't ready. I wasn't there. Emotionally, I was still back here processing, and you know what? He was healthy, and he said, "I'm sorry, but you gotta go. I can see that you're not emotionally available." So, and I was really upset about that. But yeah, right. Like me, gosh, I was really upset about that. And I saw myself grabbing, you know, acting immature, and I was like, wait a minute. He's telling you the truth. The problem was I wasn't emotionally ready to handle it. So I ended up stepping back, and I ended up looking at the workbook, and it was just about that time I realized that I needed to make amends to him, you know, as a little bit of time went by, and we remained friends. You know, it was an amiable relationship, no problem, but you know, I just couldn't see myself. And my sponsor would always say to me, it's, you know, and not like I hadn't worked steps, I just hadn't done this book. And I want to tell, for anybody, people who open this book with their sponsor and really do it are the most courageous recovering addicts I know. And the alternative is to ignore its existence and enjoy your trudging through happy destiny. Okay. what I'm trying to say is, this is deep. I mean, that's the word that comes to mind. This is deep, and I get pissed off when I have to work. And when I hit a wall with it, I'll give you a good example. Most recently, my sponsor, who I just love, I love to be mad at her too. She says, "All right, sweetheart, enough of that nonsense. Go right to the relationships section of step 4. I want it soon." Okay. Now, you know, now I sponsor, I mean, you're 21 years clean. I sponsor quite a few girls, and they've done this book from the beginning, you know. So I've got to be on the fifth step. I mean, I've been on the receiving end of all this. And I just go, "Oh, well, you know, ain't that hard." I was so mad. Look, so I'm eager to do it. I believe in my sponsor. And I grew up around here that we have reverence for those who are trying to guide us. Now, I sponsor some girls that give me a hard goddamn time. I'm like, "Don't smart mouth me. Don't you know who I am? I'm your sponsor. You asked me to fill this job. Now you're giving me shit? What's up with that?" Man, you know, I feel like telling them, "Go to the chalkboard and write, you know, respect 100 times. Gosh. You know, but anyway, I respect my sponsor, and she's instinctive. So she says to me, "All right, go to the relationship section, start right there." And I've been doing some work. Look, I want to grow, and I want to change, and I know I have some stuck spots that need more WD-40 than others. You know, I just got to keep spraying that stuff in there until, oh, okay, now it's free. You know, I'm just emotionally scarred, and I got a lot of work to do in some ways. So, and I just, you know, I won't get into all that. It's about the book. Very first question pissed me off. So I go to my home group, which is, it is called It Works How and Why, and we're a Step in Tradition meeting on Monday night in Greenbelt, 7 o'clock. Please come out and join us. Wonderful meeting. Real structured, you know, not a lot of nonsense. We're just doing the steps and traditions. First question: what conflicts in my personality make it difficult for me to maintain friendships and or romantic relationships? What? I'm like, what? And so I go, wait a minute, you know, what do you mean what conflicts in my personality? Personality conflicts come from interacting with others. I don't have conflicts in my personality, but this book is written to follow It Works How and Why. So, sponsor says, go back to the book. Okay. Well, you know, there's several references to conflicts in my personality. So I go to my home group. Before I talked to my sponsor, it was the same night. I'm like, man, I don't get that. That's really a bunch of crap. What do they mean? So I call somebody who was on the literature committee when this was written. She says, well, you know, you don't have to take it quite so literally, Pauline. You know, they're just trying to figure out what, you know, help you to see why what's your stick and stay power? What keeps you from having long-term relationships with anybody? Okay. So I go to my home group and I go, yeah, man, I'm like, rah, 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 rah. So this guy takes me over to the side after the meeting. Now, you know, like, I like to think I'm a peacock, and I'm not. And I like to think all these years I got all this quality. Well, you know, it comes and goes. And this guy takes me off the side, and he goes, well, you know, when I approached that question, what I discovered about myself was, would I rather be happy or would I rather be right? Oh, man! He floored me. There is a conflict in my personality. And I was able to take that home. I mean, I wrote it down quickly, because I don't know about you, but I smoked a lot of PCP. I got no memory. I carry a little spiral notebook with me everywhere I go. So I write that down. All right, cool. And the more that I got into the questions, the more it was revealed to me, you know, how that works. So in a previous, you know, situation, sponsor says, man, you, oh, I was asking her, I said, why do I act like this? You know, like, why is it when he says, most of it comes up in my personal relationships with men, you know, intimate affairs, and my work environment as well, but, you know, like, I can have dinner for the boyfriend. He says, you know, of course, then there's a mess in the kitchen. He's going to go back to work in 15 minutes. And he says, well, why don't we go snuggle for a while? And I go, no, I got to clean this kitchen. You know, I ain't no snuggling going on here. And she goes, why are you so enraged? And I'm like, what do you mean? Right? Because I don't see it. That's why sponsorship is so important. To trust somebody with the truth of your behavior. My behavior. Not the shit that we want to share about to make us look really nice in public. I mean, that's all good, but if I'm not telling on myself, I'm not going to get any help. So I needed to share that with her. I needed to say, and it seemed so inconsequential. It just didn't seem like it mattered that I blew him off. And she said, whoa, you're having rage and resentment. I am? She goes, yeah, look a little closer. And I started to pay attention. And in the section of resentments, in the fourth step, you know, it asks us to look at that. Now, at first glance, I'm like, I don't really have resentments. Well, then I start looking. And I started paying attention. And the crux of this course here is to make us aware so that we pay attention and are able to choose again. If I don't know, then I can't choose. Now I know. Now I know. And I swear, the next romantic guy. I was telling my friend earlier, you know, I really got some good stuff from the last relationship I was in. And even though my heart is still, you know, on the mend, you know, I learned so much about myself. And that's the beauty of it, is to be able to bring the focus back in here, bring the focus back inside. I want to tell you a couple things real quick, because I know I jumped around and, you know, we're limited on time. In step nine, I was saying I needed to make amends with this fella who I started dating after I got separated, and I wasn't ready, and I wasn't emotionally available, and I was working night shift, and I conveniently forgot that. I conveniently forgot how I was physically unavailable as well as emotionally unavailable, and I had the nerve to point fingers at him. But you know why? Because I'm in denial. Denial is something that comes with this disease. Many years you can have clean and still bring that wall up at any moment because it's convenient, you know? It protects me. And that's a good thing sometimes, but after a while it grows old. And I had that revelation, oh my God, you know, I should never have availed myself to dating him. I misled him the whole time, and I really need to clean that up. And in this step nine, it says more clearly than any of the other places that there are three primary concepts associated with making amends. And this just speaks to me because I'm a word person. They are resolution, restoration, and restitution. That's on page 83 if you want to get a little deeper with that. The thing I love about this book is it gives me a very specific direction. This is what you're doing. This is what the goal is, in case you forgot. And I tell you, I almost finished that relationship inventory. I started in January, and then I went on overtime. I took it I had a retreat in February to Costa Rica. I want to tell you, recovery is good. Having money is nice. Not owing anybody, it's really, it's a life I like living. Much better than the alternative. So I took my book with me, and I did a lot of writing, and I had so many insights into my behavior. And you know, my hope for myself and you too is that you get to see the beauty that God gave you, and this is what I'm trying to look for on a daily basis. I think I was sharing with somebody earlier that it's important for my self-esteem to recognize 5 character assets a day. And it's really good if I write them down. And I'll tell you five of mine. You can borrow them if you like. One of mine is, I'm very sociable. I'm very personable, too. And a couple people recognize that about me today. Three, I have a passion for recovery and most things that I get involved in. Let me think another. Four, I speak good English. There's one. You can borrow that. Five. Let me think one. Five. I invest in my future. There's something simple. So you know, these are the kind of things that I'm able to take away. And it's not, there's not a direct question in here, step four, that says, or, you know, a direction that says, every day I want you to write five things about yourself that you like. But it encourages me to want to be as kind to myself as I can, because by my old nature, I wasn't. And by recognizing my patterns, bringing them to God for removal and at least help. And my sponsor always says, when you work the seventh step, when you get sick of your character defects and you ask for them to be lifted, pretend that they have. Choose differently. Man, that is so simple, and I just want to complicate everything. So when I always fall back to the first step, and I always look at unmanageability, and I really thank you, Raymond, for the way that you presented that to us. And as a sponsor, I focus on a couple of things with the girls, and particularly reservations. And the section in here is very clear, but my responsibility person to person is to pull out more information from them, and as was done with me, with my sponsors. And another cool thing about this also is like Raymond covered everything. I could barely, like, what's there left to say? But this is a good book for me to use in any behavior that I am not happy with. Any behavior. And I don't really practice retail recovery, and, you know, I can't say I'm a tremendous, like, sexaholic or, you know, but I do get obsessed about perfection, and I do get compulsive, and I can't think of anything I'm compulsive about today, so it's not really, like, right on the front of my mind, but it just helps me go through it now, you know, 16 years, 20 years, whatever years clean. It has helped me immensely to continue to look at myself. I heard this guy say a couple years ago, and I have to subscribe to this. Recovery comes in cycles. I practice recovery in cycles, and it looks like this. First 3.5 years, I am working, I'm service committed, I'm like on top of it, I'm doing step work, I'm in meetings all the time, nobody, you know, I'm associating with all the recovery people, and it feels good, and I've reaped the rewards of doing that. And so I decide to coast. And that's cool for a little while, and then I start to slide down, and I start making bad decisions, and I start experiencing emotional difficulty and unmanageability. And then I'm at the bottom. And then all of a sudden, you know, I get back on the gerbil wheel and start pedaling. Okay, I'm going to work those steps, you know. I'm going to be back up there. And, you know, and so in 21 years, I've been able to go through this cycle a couple of times where I can see for myself that when I coast for any length of time, I end up in emotional jackpots. And then I have to, you know, go ahead and do a lot of work. And you know what? I'm sick of that pattern, too. And my sponsor says, take it in the seventh step, give it to your higher power, and act as if it's not existing anymore. And that gives me permission to choose differently. So my intention, my goal, and my hope for everyone is to stay on the upswing. You know, so you don't really have to go through those downturns. We all will. You know, it happens. It happens, and it's, you know, it's just something I recognize in myself, so that once I see it, I'm aware of it, I don't have to repeat it. And, you know, the literature, I mean, I can't say it often enough, the literature that we wrote for ourselves and continue to write for ourselves is unsurpassed at treating the disease of addiction. Unsurpassed. No one can speak to me in a language that I don't understand, and this is a language I do understand. So have courage, have a sponsor, dive in, reap the rewards. And your alternative is, yeah, whatever. All right, well, thanks for letting me share.